Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Los Angeles, earned a PhD from UCLA in musicology, and became a pianist and a composer. In 1962, he moved to Michigan and became a music instructor at the newly established Oakland University. In 1996, he became the founding general director of the Michigan Opera Theater, and he single-handedly brought world-class opera to Michigan. His name, Dr. David DiChiara. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now here's Jack.
We're with the man who single-handedly brought world-class opera to Michigan, Dr. David DiChiara. Doctor, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Well, Jack, I'm always honored to even be considered to be on your program. You have brought so many wonderful people to all of our attention.
Thank you. Can we start by talking about your parents and your childhood?
Well, my parents were born in Italy, in Calabria, and in very, very poor circumstances. I've been back there several times to look back at my roots, and they, of course, were actually lived in a very isolated mountaintop, and there was no school, and my father, even as a child, was just took care of the family by raising goats and just a very meager living. And when he married my mother, his dream was to come here and have a better life for their future children. And you know what I think one of the things that kind of always motivated me was that I realized when I knew and listened to the sacrifices that they made in order to come here, to even find the means to make that trip and into a strange land, etc., was that I felt that I owed it to them to do things that were positive and to be a successful human being. They, as I say, they were without education, but they had a tremendous amount of just good common sense. And so I always understood that no matter how much education one has, that it was really being understanding the common sense things about life that had to guide us.
Where did you get your love for music, Doctor?
Well, as a young boy living in McKeesport, Pennsylvania, very much on the smoky side of the Monongahela River, I was kind of a lonely child. My sisters and brother were older than I and had their own lives, and I spent a lot of time listening to the radio and playing by myself often. And I do remember that I used to kind of make a pretend theater in my room and then show movies and throw the dice and go, oh, well, I didn't get too much audience for this one. I'll have to show another movie. When I think back at that, that was rather prophetic, always worrying about ticket sales, but listening to the Metropolitan Opera and not really understanding what was happening, but being engulfed by the music. The music absolutely was something that made me feel, it just took me both inside myself and outside of myself. It was so incredibly moving to me. And that's what started my love for music. I was desperate to learn more about music. And when I was about 10 years old, we moved to California because my mother was very ill, and doctors said that they had to get her out of winter weather. And she would, when we went there, she would start doing housekeeping and cleaning people's houses so I could have the several dollars I needed each week to take piano lessons. And that was the beginning. It was my, I knew at that point that some way or another music was going to be the determining factor in my life.
Talk to us about the magic of music. What does music do for people?
You know, music, I know it often sounds trite and is kind of a common knowledge, but music truly is an international language. And what I think is so great about music, first of all, is that we can communicate so many between cultures, between generations, etc., through the power of music. Music uplifts us. It speaks in ways that words cannot. It goes beyond words, and it's that power, that indefinable kind of thing that enriches our lives, that helps us. And if we're lonely, if we're happy, it reflects all of our emotions, and often in such a deep way that it takes us beyond what we normally feel. It helps us to define our emotions and to express them. I cannot imagine life without the power of music being front and foremost.
We're talking to Dr. David Takira. When we come back, we'll ask him about opera. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with the founding general director of the Michigan Opera House, Dr. David Takira. Doctor, talk to us about opera.
Well, you know, opera, first of all, is an art form that has been around for over 400 years. And it, of course, has taken hold and reflects many cultures, many countries. But I think what is so special about opera, it is the ultimate multimedia form of artistic expression. It takes the power of music that we talked about earlier, and it lends itself to all kinds of subjects of stories, whether they're historic, whether they're romance, whether they're stories of betrayal or of sacrifice, all of those things which in themselves have powerful messages. But when the music expresses behind what those stories are, behind the words that are being sung, it goes with a depth which is beyond what the words themselves can do. And when you tie that in together with a surrounding of you know, elaborate scenery, with a little chorus, often with dancers, children's chorus, with great voices. I think often people don't realize that great singers are like athletes. They train for years in order to create a voice which is natural and which has no amplification. A lot of young people don't realize they come to the opera house and they're absolutely convinced that because this voice can be heard throughout the house over a 70-piece orchestra, that they must have a microphone, you know, underneath their collar or something. But it isn't. It's this voice which is natural and which comes out of this trained, body. And so I think an opera can lend itself to, it can express so many cultures. I've had the privilege of presenting operas that were Armenian, of Polish, etc., and where these people could come and be proud of their own heritage, and others can better understand those heritages. And so I think it's a tremendous kind of entertainment which allows people to not only express and understand the depth of expression, but it also informs them and exposes them to other people's cultures, and which is what we all need to be doing to have a stronger and a better world. So, of course, as you know, I'm a great advocate of it, because I think once people are exposed to it, they can become very, very moved by it. This year, for example, I'm presenting the opera which we premiered here, Margaret Garner, which was about the African-American experience. Margaret Garner was a true historic figure who came out of slavery and, escaping, tried to shield her children from the horrors of slavery, and when she was captured again, she did what was probably the most unbelievable thing. She decided that she could not allow her children to go back into slavery and took their life. But the power of what she had to do in a very famous court trial that ensued was one of the signal events leading up to the Civil War. So we use opera to teach about history. I'm doing another opera in a year or two, which is about the Israelites in Babylon. And we still feel their pain and feel their captivity through the music that Verdi gave, and which moved a generation of Italians that were also looking for their own independence. And so it's opera's had an incredible role throughout history in terms of moving people to other towards understanding what's possible, how people have lived throughout the ages.
Dr. David DeCura, take us back to 1971. I think that's 3 years after the riot/rebellion. And you had a dream. Talk to us about that dream.
Well, the dream was that here was one of the major cities in America that had no opera company, where young people could be exposed to the art form, young singers could have opportunities to develop their craft. And so my dream, of course, was that this great city, like all other cities, should have an opera company that served the community in education and bringing the great works on the stage. And it was clear, of course, to do that, I needed to find a place where we would perform, and I always felt it needed to be in the city. That one of the great things about any great city is that the core of the city should be where all of the great cultural institutions should be. And of course, we had here already a wonderful symphony and a museum, and so it was my dream to add an opera house to that, what we call crown jewel of cultural institutions. Naturally, most people thought I was pretty unrealistic as I began this odyssey. Unrealistic, first of all, that I felt it should be downtown. I found a theater that had been abandoned, and that was the Music Hall. And it was loaned to me by the owner, Mr. Gaskin, and we brought in volunteers, and I went out into the suburbs and began promoting the fact that we were starting an opera company, and that we would start small, but that we were going to be doing this. I'd heard people saying, you know, David, you're a nice guy, but, you know, for aid, this is a blue-collar town. There's not going to be enough support for opera, and B, you're wanting to do this in the middle of a city that has been severely tested, and so much of the exodus of into the suburbs. But you know, the more I heard that, the more determined I was that what I felt was possible could and should be done. And So we, you know, I began that you know, without looking back, and I knew that it was risky. I gave up my tenure at Oakland University, which is a wonderful kind of a lifeline. You know, when you've got tenure, it means you have a job forever. But that was comfortable, but that was not what I felt I was destined to do and to help to give to the city. And it was, I have to admit, there was a lot of times when I kept questioning myself and saying, you know, what do I think I'm doing here? This is a very difficult challenge. But every time I told myself that, I also told myself that that's what challenges were for. They were there to be faced if you believed in it, if you felt that it was going to enhance the quality of life for people, if it was going to help revitalize the city, then it was worth doing, and it was worth making that risk, because risks are all about simply saying you tried, and until you keep doing that, you'll never know whether you can achieve it or not. So it's been a long process. I remember one time when I was when we bought the old Grand Circus Theater, because now we were going to have our own home and create it and transform it into a world-class opera house, that there was a radio interview, because I was doing a capital campaign, and I was naming the boxes, individuals or corporations, you know, and for $250,000. And there was a, and the name is not important, but who had a radio program, and said, so they're raising $250,000 gifts to name a box at the Opera House. And he said, just imagine what $250,000 could do. How many students it could send to summer camp, or, you know, went through this whole litany. And said, you know, we need an opera house in Detroit about as much as we need a bull ring on Gratiot Avenue. Well, you know, that kind of hurt and stung and so forth. But I thought, this man doesn't understand what we can do with children when there is an opera house. Every summer we have, for 8 weeks every year, summer camps at the Opera House, where they come and they learn about music. They create their own musical theater pieces. They learn about dance. They work with famous teachers from around the country. And they get a sense of achievement that, you know, some of these young people have gone on to wonderful careers. And I thought, you know, the man who said we don't need one simply had no concept of what we could achieve. And if he were alive today, and he's not, he would look to see how the Opera House itself was a catalyst for the development of the whole area around us. But now there are two stadiums across the street, there are restaurants, and the YMCA has moved in, and it's one of the most vital parts of the city. So, you know, I never knew all of that would happen. I dreamt it can. I knew that arts can really be a true catalyst, because everybody can relate to the strength of what arts are and want to have their lives enriched, whether it's theater or music or dance or whatever. We all deserve that. We need that for that part of us, which is, you know, which is that interior part of us, which maybe relates to our soul, our spirit, whatever one would like to define it as.
We're talking to Dr. David Takira, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Dr. David Takira, who in 1999 brought us the three tenors to Tiger Stadium one evening. Doctor, talk about that night.
Well, that was one of the, probably a night I will never remember, forget, I guess, because, I mean, first of all, to have the three tenors in Detroit was a dream for so many of us, and I certainly want to thank some of the people that, you know, helped make that possible, people like Frank Stella and Jennifer Nasser, Ford Motor Company, that underwrote it. It was a huge happening, but I tell you, that night, starting about 5:30, we had this huge tent, and, you know, people were beginning to come, and there was a big dinner and so forth. Well, we were rehearsing out on the outdoor stage, and suddenly a huge storm came, and I had to move the whole orchestra into shelter, and I thought, oh, my God, what's going to happen now? I mean, this is like, you know, a multi-million-dollar project that could suddenly have to be canceled. The one thing that, I mean, it wasn't a tremendous amount of, you know, of kind of anything. Canceling it would be a disaster, but at least we had had the forethought to insure the night with the Lloyd's of London in case something like that happened. But within an hour and a half, by 7 o'clock, suddenly it became the most beautiful evening I'd ever seen. And the orchestra went back out, and they did this rehearsal. People came from the dinner, all the sponsors, and then the audience. We had, I believe, about 45,000 people. And it was a magical night. And, of course, these three artists, who were among the great singers of all time, together made something that was greater than all of its parts. And they understood that. I mean, one cannot deny that any one of them had enough ego to, you know, to carry them through their whole lifetime. But they also understood that their talent and their greatness, when combined with two others like that, brought something that was very, very special, and I was very grateful too, because it was the second phase of our capital campaign to allow us to complete the Opera House, and a lot of people were very, very both generous and excited, because seeing the three tenors was really a dream come true for so many thousands of people.
It was a glorious night, and it got kicked off with Aretha Franklin, if I recall.
It did. Aretha came, and she sang the Star-Spangled Banner, and she, of course, you know, Aretha loves opera, which is great fun, and I've heard her. She often sings arias in her own very unique way, and of course, she's one of our great icons to be here in our own city.
And Mary Callahan Lynch, our own Mary Callahan Lynch, is her
Mary Callahan Lynch is a wonderful artist, a great teacher, somebody that I've been very proud of since the early days, and when she was singing and my productions. She's doing some wonderful work these days with working with children and bringing opera to children.
Speaking of wonderful, fabulous talents, talk to us about Bocelli and when he was here.
Well, Bocelli was a fascinating kind of, I knew that Bocelli loved opera, that was his dream, but by however it worked, he became this superstar of stadiums and crossover, you know, with more popular art, but sang arias, etc. And I met him, and his dream was he had done an opera in Italy, and I said, would you like to be in an opera in America? And he said, I would like to do that. And we chose the opera. It was his choice of doing an opera by Massenet called Werther. And it was a wonderful experience because, of course, normally when we do an opera, the artists rehearse in a rehearsal room without any scenery. And all of the scenes are kind of blocked out on the floor in different colors. If it's red, it's the first act, and these are the steps, and if it's green, it's the second act. Well, of course, being totally blind, that was not going to work. So I was really fascinated and so pleased to give him the opportunity to, in a situation where being handicapped, that he could really pursue what he loved so much. And Denise Graves came to be his leading lady and Charlotte. And people came from all over the world. I couldn't believe when we announced it. I remember one woman flying in from Vienna, and she came and she stayed for three performances. And people who had saved their money, there was a couple that it was their dream that when they would get married, that would be their honeymoon. They would come to Detroit to see Bocelli. And unfortunately, the one night they came, Bocelli at the very last minute felt that he couldn't sing, that he was having problems with his throat. And I said, "Well, Andrea, if we're going to cancel tonight," I said, "you're going to come out on stage with me and explain, you know." And which he did, and I had a cover that came out. Well, they were, when I knew that they were there and they were so upset, I went to them and I said, "Look, Mr. Bocelli's going to be sitting in my box, and you'll come and sit with us." And I think that was as exciting to them as seeing him perform. So I was pleased we had a solution for that. And Andrea was so kind to do whatever he could to make sure that the people who were his fans were not disappointed. You know,
we're talking to Dr. David DeCura, who's also composed operas. We'll talk to him about that when we come back. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Dr. David DeCura, the only man who's ever been the general director in America to have founded and led two opera companies. In 1999, you start another dream. You're going to write an opera entitled Cyrano. Talk to us about that.
Well, you know, I had always, I studied composition when I was at UCLA, but it was a time when most professors and composers were writing what we call atonal music, or music that was very avant-garde. And I was a romantic, and so I didn't have much to say in that language, and I decided, well, I guess I'm not going to be composing. But as years went by, there seemed to be a kind of a reaction to that, and many more composers were using whatever musical language they felt comfortable with. And I thought, well, maybe this is the time for me to do what I've always wanted to do. I've spent so much of my life producing other composers' operas. I'd like to just do one for myself. And the story of Cyrano was brought to me by a very well-known literary and stage director, and he brought it so much alive to me. We went through the whole story with the most beautiful feelings. I fell in love with the words, Cyrano's words, as he expressed his passion for Roxanne. It's a love story like Romeo and Juliet, and I said, well, maybe I could bring something to it, again, believing that wonderful stories can be brought even more deeply felt through the power of music, and that's what I tried to do. And we had the world premiere here in October, and I was moved by the reception of it, and then a few months later, we took it to Philadelphia, where it had, and there I was quite worried because I knew that its success in Detroit was partly a kind of a thank you from people who appreciated that we had an opera company and that, you know, that we had done some good things for the city. But Philadelphia, I knew, wasn't going to have that kind of relationship to me as an individual. And so when we premiered that there, I was so grateful that both the press and that the audiences responded so enthusiastically. So I thought, well, maybe this opera does have something that can speak to people and will make its way, and it'll be seen in Baltimore next year, and then Miami, and we're looking at Europe. We'll see if it has a life. One never knows, you know. It's like children. Some grow up to be successful, and others, you know, have a natural, normal life, and it's up to Cyrano. I can't do anything more for it, but it was my own personal kind of expression, and I was grateful to that I could do it, because it fed a little bit more in me than what I had been doing so much in my own public life.
Dr. David DeCura, take us back to that night in October of 2007 here at the Michigan Opera House. It's the world premiere. You come on the stage. You get a 6.5 minute standing ovation. What did you think about?
Well, I have to tell you that before that, you know, normally every night I come out on stage before a performance begins and welcome the audience. That night I didn't. I kind of hid backstage. I didn't want to be anywhere where anybody was. And then, you know, when it was over and the whole cast and seventh and took their bows and then called me out, I was just kind of overwhelmed, you know, because, you know, I was just still worrying about, you know, this passage and that, and, you know, maybe this could have been improved. I was still working on the opera in my head, and the response was so incredible. I just felt so humbled by it all, you know, that first of all that people would come and that they would relate to it and that they appreciated it. It was a very moving experience for me.
Doctor, anybody that's ever been around you walks away saying, that man always focuses on the good in other people. How do you do that?
Oh, I do it because I love doing that. You know, and I've told young people, and often I've done a number of commencement addresses at various universities, and what I always like to tell them is, first of all, they should not turn away from something that they dream about doing. That they should not be thinking about, oh, well, that's not a practical thing to do. Building an opera company was not a practical thing to do. And so many people have dreams of things that other people think about as being, well, that's, you know, that's just not possible or whatever. So that's the first thing, to really follow what it is they think they could love to do. But then also understand that anything you do in life, you really don't do by yourself. Whatever I've done in this city and in my career has been because I've had hundreds of people who have supported and have worked with me and have collaborated with me. And so the thing is, and you only do that really if you like working with people. And you know, all of us have good qualities, have some negative qualities, you know, in our personality and so forth. But what I've always done and what I love doing is that you meet somebody and you just look for those things that you like about them, because that's what they really are all about. Sometimes those qualities that seem like, oh my, this or that, you know, you just don't understand where that might come from. That's maybe some kind of part of their life that we're not privy to. But what you do see and what you feel about them is positive, and that gives you the opportunity to want to work with them, to like being with them. And I believe that that has taken me through life, that I love people, because human beings, being a human being is an incredible, incredible thing. and to be able to relate to what that person is about and what that person gives, emanates in terms of their interests, of their thoughts, and all of those things, and their desires, is all about the process of living. And that's the best advice I can always give to young people. Don't turn away from somebody because you don't like their personality or something. You know, the personality has many dimensions, and within that personality are things that you're going to find very, very, very positive, that will give you pleasure, that you will and that you can celebrate. I think celebrating people is what life is all about.
Dr. David DeCura, from all of us in Southeast Michigan, thanks for all you've done. You've made this a much better place to live.
Well, Jack, I thank you, and I want to return that, because you have given us so much. When we receive your letters, which have so many good thoughts and so forth, I think, what a beautiful way to start a day. And you know, you're one of those people, and I just enjoy our time together.
Thank you. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.